Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 98. My name is John. I make my living off the evening news. Just give me something I can use. People love it when you lose. They love dirty laundry. Okay. Before I get into this month's diatribe, I want to tell you a little story. Back in the summer of 2005, I had the opportunity to go to New Orleans with some co-workers. There were plans to do a tour of the city, eat beignets at Café du Monde, and of course, party on Bourbon Street. But I had one special stop in mind. I had heard that there was a particular little magic shop in the French Quarter, and I wanted to stop in with the hopes of meeting the owner, shaking his hand, and giving him my thanks. Unfortunately, while we were en route to New Orleans, a storm that had been heading to Mexico took a turn and was coming straight to Louisiana. You may have heard of it. It was called Katrina. That, in and of itself, is another long story that I probably should tell sometime. Anyway, by the time I got to the little magic shop, they had already closed and had an apology note on the door stating that they had evacuated the city. That was the closest I ever got to the owner. Sadly, now I will never get the chance to shake his hand or say thank you. Thank you for all the laughs as Judge Harold T. Stone on Night Court and Harry the Hat on Cheers. I highly recommend, if you have Netflix, to watch Season 1, Episode 19 of Cheers titled Pick a Con, Any Con. You'll see why I wanted to stop to say thank you to the brilliant Harry Anderson. In an era where there were so many megastars on network television, he was a vastly underrated gem. Rest in peace, Mr. Anderson. We will miss your talent, but will gratefully remember the smiles you brought to our lives. Now, back to business. It is said, art imitates life, or perhaps life imitates art. It is said, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. It is said, there is nothing new under the sun. Sometimes you search and search and search for answers, and when you finally discover them, you realize the answers have always been there. You just never noticed them before. Live and learn. But learning comes from more than just your own experiences, your own life. You can learn from others as well. You can learn from people who existed years ago, generations ago, millennia ago. You can learn from people who never really existed, other than in a storyteller's mind. Of course you could learn lessons from fictitious characters. What do you think fairy tales were originally before society turned the stories into happily ever afters? Hansel and Gretel originally were eaten by the old woman, a lesson for children to stay out of places they don't belong. Sleeping Beauty? Don't even get me started on that fucked up fairy tale. I'm going to give you spoilers for a story, for a movie. So if you haven't seen it, you may want to pause the podcast, go buy the movie, because it's worth owning, watch it, and then come back. Even if you haven't seen the movie, you may already know what it's about and the big spoiler that is the crux of the movie. Regardless, you'd have to be pretty sheltered to have never heard of Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane, released in 1941, making it 77 years old at the time of this podcast. I will be talking about it in depth, complete with the spoilage of one of the all-time classic movie reveals. So, last warning, spoiler alert for what some consider to be the greatest movie of all time, directed by Orson Welles, Citizen Kane. The movie opens with the death of the titular and main character, Charles Foster Kane. While holding a snow globe, with his last breath, he whispers the word Rosebud and dies while the snow globe falls and shatters on the floor. He is, well, was a rich man. He was powerful. He was famous. And the media of the day explodes with the news of his death. The producer of a particular newsreel about the death of Kane is intrigued by that last whispered word, Rosebud, and he sends a reporter off to find its meaning. The reporter goes off to interview people who knew Kane, or in one case, read first account written memoirs. Flashbacks of their stories show Kane throughout his life. As a boy, he grew up in poverty. However, okay, you know what? Screw it. I'm tired. I'm just going to read this from Wikipedia. After a gold mine is discovered on her property, Kane's mother, Mary Kane, sends Charles away to live with a banker, Walter Thatcher, so that young Charles would be properly educated. It's also implied that Kane's father could be violent towards his son, and that's another reason she would like to send him away. While Thatcher and Charles's parents discuss arrangements inside, the young boy plays happily with a sled in the snow outside his parents' boarding house, and he protests being sent away to live with a stranger. Furious at the prospect of exile from his own family to live with a man he doesn't know, the boy strikes the banker with his sled and attempts to run away. Years later, after gaining full control over his trust fund at the age of 25, Kane enters the newspaper business and embarks on a career of yellow journalism. He takes control of the New York Inquirer and starts publishing scandalous articles that attack Thatcher's business interests. But after the stock market crashed in 1929, Kane is forced to sell controlling interest of his newspaper empire to Thatcher. Back in the present, Thompson, the reporter, interviews Kane's personal business manager, Mr. Bernstein. Bernstein recalls how Kane hired the best journalists available to build the Inquirer's circulation. And Kane rose to power by successfully manipulating public opinion regarding the Spanish-American War and marrying Emily Norton, the niece of a president of the United States. Thompson interviews Kane's estranged best friend, Jedediah Leland, in a retirement home. Leland recalls how Kane's marriage to Emily disintegrates more and more over the years, and he begins to have an affair with an amateur singer, Susan Alexander, while he's running for governor of New York. Both Kane's wife and his political opponent discover the affair, and the public scandal ends Kane's political career. Kane goes on to marry Susan and forces her into a humiliating operatic career for which she has neither the talent nor the ambition. Back in the present, Susan now consents to an interview with Thompson and recalls her failed opera career. Kane finally allows her to abandon her singing career after she attempts suicide. After years spent dominated by Kane and living in isolation at Xanadu, Kane's mansion, Susan leaves Kane. And Kane's butler, Raymond, recounts that after Susan leaves him, Kane begins violently destroying the contents of her bedroom. But he suddenly calms down when he sees a snow globe and says, "Rosebud." Back at Xanadu, Kane's belongings are being cataloged or discarded. Thompson concludes that he's unable to solve the mystery and that the meaning of Kane's last word will forever remain an enigma. As the film ends, the camera reveals that Rosebud is the trade name of the sled on which the 8-year-old Kane was playing on that day that he was taken from his home in Colorado. The sled, thought to be junk by the Xanadu staff members, is burned in the furnace. The answer to the one question on everybody's mind is forever lost. Pretty cool, huh? It's one of those movies that, while it's not my favorite, I'll still watch it whenever I run across it on TV, obviously usually on Turner Classic Movies. Now, after all that, why am I talking in depth about Citizen Kane in what is predominantly a political podcast? When I was younger, the full narrative of the movie took me in. As I rewatched it a few years ago, something else really got to me. Even though I was aware of it before, I never really focused on it. Remember the mention of yellow journalism? I had to look that one up. Wikipedia again. They're just so concise. Yellow journalism is an American term for journalism and associated newspapers that present little or no legitimate, well-researched news, while instead using eye-catching headlines for increased sales. Techniques may include exaggeration of news events, scandal-mongering, or sensationalism. By extension, the term yellow journalism is used today as a pejorative to decry any journalism that treats news in an unprofessional or unethical fashion. Now, even if you only know some of the basics about Citizen Kane, you also know it's loosely based on the life of newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst, as well as pieces of other tycoons and even Orson Welles himself. William Randolph Hearst, of course, built a media empire, and he is known for sensationalizing news, even fabricating angles to stories in order to fit his agenda. He was a self-proclaimed populist, a progressive, and was a member of the Democrat Party for most of his life. When the USS Maine was sunk under suspicious circumstances in Cuba, which had been sent to Havana to protect U.S. interests while Cuba sought independence from Spain, Hearst made sure the reports in his papers blamed it on sabotage, even though they did not have evidence to support it. This, in part, stoked anger against Spain in the United States, and helped push the U.S. into the Spanish-American War. Hearst had his agenda and the means to promote it. So he did. Just like his competitors promoted their agendas. Different factions of the media gave biased perspectives on the news of the day. Now, Citizen Kane was released in 1941. And it took inspiration, at least in part, from a man who entered publishing in 1887. Well over a century ago, the media was trying to manipulate public opinion based on the publisher's political ideology. I bring that up because we have this absolute myopia that media outlets today are giving us complete information. And we're shocked, shocked that media outlets, news networks, local newscasts, websites, and newspapers are biased in their reporting. This is nothing new. Up until about 30 years ago, every major city in America, and most of the minor ones, had at the very least two newspapers. Why? Because one was probably devoted to Republican ideology and the other to Democrat ideology. But why? If the media is fair and balanced, if the media is non-biased, why are there multiple local news telecasts? Why are there multiple national news networks? Because each one is in place to support either left-wing or right-wing politics. Every newspaper, from the San Antonio Express News to the Wall Street Journal, every news network from NBC to Fox, every news website from the Huffington Post to the Drudge Report, has a political agenda. Period. Every media corporation has a political agenda. And 90% of all television networks, local affiliates, and newspapers are owned by six mega corporations, each one with its own political agenda. They may not vary much, but they all have it, which means they all want you to see only their side. And that's the way it's been for as long as there has been media in the United States. Media bias is nothing new. It has always been the norm. A few weeks ago, my Twitter account and Facebook feeds got inundated with posts about the horrors of right-wing controlled media. First, they posted the list of stations owned by Sinclair Media. Soon afterwards, I started seeing the postings of the video. How disgusting it was from the point of view of the posers. Point of view of the posters. All these stations were reporting the same thing verbatim from the same script. Okay, so far, I don't really care that media is biased to either the left or the right is not the least bit surprising to me. Apparently it is to a lot of the people I follow on social media. To be honest, I've seen this same claim, complete with video compilations, made against left-wing media. I would bet good money that the vast majority of people who posted about Sinclair Broadcasting turn blind eyes and deaf ears to scripted left-wing commentary. I would double down and bet that none of the people who, in the past, have posted about left-wing media bias posted a damn thing about Sinclair. Then, I looked at the video. It's a scripted commentary about how they will make sure due diligence is done so that so-called fake news is not passed off as legitimate news. They're not even doing a news story. It's commentary about how they say they will operate. It's a fucking mission statement! Have you ever worked for a company that had a mission statement? I used to work for a mega corporation that had a mission statement. I believe it was six sentences focusing on keywords about how they would operate their business. Every meeting we attended had referenced at least one of these keywords from the mission statement. This is the same corporation that laid off 11,000 people after taking $3 billion in government stimulus designed for saving and creating jobs. The CEO got to dine at the White House, while employees wondered if they would still be able to earn a paycheck for the company the next week. We can see how well they adhere to their mission statement. Mission statements are a line of bullshit corporations feed to themselves, then regurgitate it back to the public. Yes, I just said Sinclair and American Express and all these other corporations that you love so much, whether they're left-wing toadies or right-wing toadies, are feeding you fecal vomit, excrement from a male bovine, which is then eaten and vomited back up and presented for you to eat. And if you believe their propaganda, all you're doing is swallowing a big old spoonful. How's that for painting a word picture? Sinclair could soon own 70% of local news media, according to the left-wing panic commentary. Do you think they would be so frantic if Sinclair was biased in favor of the Democrats? Hell no. There wouldn't be a single word from the left if one of their ally corporations had that kind of control. If they were ever confronted about something like that happening, they would stonewall and misdirect until they found any remote justification. And you damn well better believe the right-wing sycophants would be all over social media with apocalyptic predictions because their point of view is now being gagged. Do you get it yet? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? If you're up in arms and posting all over social media about the horrors of a corporation dictating the same script to dozens of local newscasts across the United States, then you're either grossly or wantonly naive. If you genuinely believe your singular choice for a news network is giving you complete information, then you're probably contributing more to the divisiveness in this country than any half-wit politician. Impartial news is a fairy tale. I don't know why we get that impression in this country. Maybe it's because the generations that grew up watching the likes of Walter Cronkite were lulled into a false sense of objectivity. Sorry to break the news to you, but Cronkite had his agenda also. Hell, I have an agenda. And yes, I get it. I'm not a reporter. I am a practically faceless podcaster who would be amazed if he had more than 3 people listen to him. At best, I'm a commentator, not a reporter. But at least I'm being honest about it. How many times have I told you I'm a libertarian? That this is a libertarian podcast? Maybe that's why I shouldn't expect anybody to listen to my political podcast. I'm honest about what I'm trying to do. Do you think the founding fathers back in their day looked kindly upon the media when they reported or commented with an anti-federalist bias? Hell no. They tried to get that silenced. Do you think a bunch of ragtag colonists would have been able to defeat the British military if the colonial media could have convinced the public it was a bad idea? Media morality is as fickle as political morality. The same groups who wanted the U.S. to go to war so badly with Spain that they were willing to print false reports are the ones who spoke so vehemently against the Vietnam War. It all depends upon whether they feel it will benefit their political allies. Don't believe me? I quipped a year ago that if you want to look for a silver lining in the election of Donald Trump as the President of the United States, it's that now the liberal media can go back to acting like they care if innocent civilians are killed in America's various battles in the Middle East. Meanwhile, conservative media can go back to acting like they give a shit about the American middle class. People are going on and on about fake news. Well, to some extent, it's all fake. It's disingenuous, sickeningly biased, and designed to pit you against your neighbors. This is modern America, where the gut reaction is, somebody needs to do something about this. And by somebody, they mean government. And by do something about, they mean regulate. Oh, the media is biased? Well, we need to have some governing body step in to make sure that if the media tells a story slanted toward one side of the political aisle, they should be forced to tell another story of equal length and importance about the opposing side. Well, who's going to do that? Well, government, of course, because we all know how fair and balanced government is, and we all know how open and honest and transparent government is in their dealings with the citizenry. God. No, no, no. You want the truth? You can handle it, trust me. But you're not going to find it if somebody else controls the narrative. You're not going to find it if you only find the stories that feed your prejudice. The truth is, only you can find your truth. The good news is, it's there in front of you. It's been there this whole time. But I already told you that at the beginning of this episode, if you were paying attention. How many times over the past couple of years have I told you that socialism could work, but only if every single person voluntarily agrees to do it and has the freedom to walk away from it if they no longer like it? I'm a libertarian. Socialism doesn't work for me. Socialism could work for you, but you have to discover that for yourself. You have to find that truth for yourself. You have to listen to the guy wearing the Che Guevara t-shirt telling you how great it is, and you have to listen to the lady carrying around a well-read copy of The Road to Serfdom telling you about the evils of socialism. And then you have to decide for yourself. If you only listen to one side, you'll never make a fully informed decision. Just like if you only watch MSNBC or only read the Wall Street Journal, you will only get one side. But there's one more thing you need to understand before I go. Despite what they try to tell us here in the United States, there are more than two political options. For generations, we've been told there are two sides, Republicans and Democrats. We have this vast pool of natural rights guaranteed us by the Constitution, but each side has plucked out the natural rights they believe to be important. And what's worse, they are drunk on their political bias. Since each values their collection of rights so much, they hiss and spit and fight like alley cats to prove to their constituents that these rights are so sacred that no one should change or take them away. At the same time, they hiss and spit and fight like alley cats to claim that the other side's collection of rights are foolish and invalid, and therefore should be changed or taken away. And in this great political melee, the only real losers are the torn, tattered, and destroyed natural rights. If you are devoted to one of these sides, as most media are, then You don't care that rights are being shredded or lost. Only that your side is winning. God forbid if you say the wrong thing to either of these groups to make them think you don't fall completely into lockstep with their ideology. But you don't have to let yourself be forced into their myopic dogma. There are other sides. And since I've already admitted to you that I'm biased, I'm going to tell you about the one I side with that believes all natural rights are precious. Not only the ones the Republicans champion or the Democrats champion, but every single one. And we're not here to fight like alley cats to decimate and destroy. We're here to restore and protect. We're libertarians. And we're an odd little bunch. If you listen to this podcast, you know that even though I was never a member of the Republican Party, I often supported and promoted their policies. If you look at my Twitter bio, I call it Awakening from the Conservative Coma. Now, I've met a few others like me at libertarian meetings. But I've also met many libertarians who came from the Democrat Party, former supporters who once promoted that political faction, but no more. How did we all find each other? We stopped listening to only one side. We stopped letting the commentators and biased news reporters feed us what we want to hear. Instead of being told what the truth is, we sought it out for ourselves. That's the only way you're ever going to find your truth. No newspaper, talk show, newscast, or website is going to do it for you. Knowledge is indeed power. So why not put that power in your own hands? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.